Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This is the World Cup on Caught Offside.
Ronaldo! Oh, it's come on, God!
Your hosts, Andrew and JJ.
Oh, brother. Caught offside from just outside of New York City and from an apartment in Brooklyn, New York. Andrew Gunling, JJ Devaney. 3-1, it ends for the United States men's national team at the World Cup. What's up, brother?
I don't know, man. How are you feeling? You tell me first, and I'll give you my thoughts.
Bummed. you feel after a game like that and after something that you've waited, you say 4 years between World Cups, but really for us, it's been 8.5 years, this wait to see the U.S. back in a tournament. And any time that it ends before you're ready for it to end is just going to be a disappointment. There's no way around that. Now we're going to get into all the nuances. There's a lot of feelings that accompany that. I mean, I'm very proud of this team.
Matthew McGee says on the chat, I'm not buying into the hate. Proud of the team.
No hate. No, there's no hate. Certainly not hate. I tweeted right before we started that I'm both proud and frustrated. And I think that's kind of, that's just me. I'm not going to tell anybody else how to feel right now, but that's where I'm at this moment. I think that there were, of course I'm proud. I mean, the Dutch are good. Like we'll talk about that, but there's a chance that we maybe did not give that team as much credit as they deserve coming into this game. Now there were weaknesses that could have still been exposed that didn't happen, but there are players on that Dutch team that are spectacular. And we saw that today. The U.S. went toe to toe with them. It was, they were in it. So you have to be proud. I mean, God, these guys like Tyler Adams, and I know he had a bad moment today, but like you saw
Two bad moments,
Pulisic playing hurt. You saw what these guys gave.
I'm going to throw this out there now because you've opened up a channel for it. I would say that the mismanagement of the Iranian game really put us in a position that we were quite tired going into this. And I would say after the bright start we made, and certainly after the Dutch goal, we looked like a fatigued team.
Yeah. There are certainly some players out there in particular that we'll identify over the course of, this live stream here that, we'll roll through and say who just didn't quite look like themselves in this one. So proud, but like you're hitting on now, frustrated. Christian Pulisic one-on-one with the keeper in the third minute of this game, who knows what the complexion of this game becomes if that goes in. That's a frustrating moment.
Haji
Wright, an errant back pass, and you've got your striker one-on-one with the keeper, and he takes a first touch that nearly plays him out of bounds. Frustrated. Now he scored a minute later. So one of those two things doesn't happen without the other. But, there's there are moments in this game that you're going to relive and that will forever kind of haunt the psyche of the American soccer fan. You'll think about what could have been. So I guess that's where I'm at right now. What about you? What are your immediate impressions of all this?
Well, I mean, I was getting slated and torched for my daily blind blindness segment, which was...
Well, there's a mixed bag there.
It was a mixed bag there. I was saying, hey, this is a guy we can get at. And when you saw Sergiño Dest absolutely burn past him in the first half to put in a cross that typically, like all our crosses, went behind or did or was cut out, then you thought Jage is onto something. And then the other part was the pass progression, the way the Dutch move the ball into midfield and how important he is. And we saw that on the first goal and the third goal. We saw him play the ball in initially into the midfield for the first goal, and then they broke down the right-hand side and cut it back from Memphis Depay. And then for the third goal, we see him not picked up at all, and he puts in a cross where Robinson is completely lost. Who was it? Dumfries at the back, yeah. Stick, and he volleys home.
Wreaked havoc on us in this game.
I thought Timber and Dumfries, generally handled Pulisic well. I thought Pulisic played decently, although I don't think he's definitely not 100% fit. But I thought the Dutch, like the way the Dutch set up was, they'd looked at us and they thought, okay, this is how we can stop their midfield. And they went man for man in the midfield. They didn't allow us to turn. They didn't, like, we had one turn in the first half when Robinson slotted into the midfield, right? And I remember he receives that ball from Tim Ream short, and it's a sharp turn, and he's away into acres of space. And of course, typically he runs in, he's at the Dutch back four. He's on the edge of the box. And typically what happens with all our chances when we run them in close? Nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing. So the ball comes back down the field. But that was the one moment where like the midfield got turned. Generally, it didn't. They stopped them. And there was sloppy play. Musa had his sloppiest game in a long time. Tyler Adams was at fault in part for the first two goals, and we'll analyze that a little bit later. And McKenny and Musa swap wings. And when McKenny went to the right side, I thought, now you've got the idea. Let's try and overload on the blind Ake access and get in behind. And we didn't do it enough. But their plan, they did and executed very, very well. And if it wasn't for a bit of Dutch arrogance in the middle of the second half, I actually think they would have run away with it, and we wouldn't have scored at all. What was the other point?
We'll talk about the goal, but like the way we scored the goal... I don't know what you even, if you're the Dutch, like, what do you,
someone
you can
said say, that,
you could call it Dutch arrogance, I guess. That seems harsh too. Like, that was,
how
what
is it
the
harsh,
hell happened
though?
There?
How is it harsh?
How because it harsh? What, like, if you're Louis van Gaal and you look at a replay of that goal, you're like, I don't even know how it went in. I don't know what to tell
Memphis
any of you.
Depay was on a one-man mission to get the US back into this game for a period of play. He was in the midfield, fannying around, doing stepovers, losing the ball, and we were breaking. He played a pass that put, was it? It was Depay that put Hadji Wright in. And then,
right, but I'm saying,
and then minutes later, he loses the ball again. Now, what I will say, someone on the live stream said it was like a FIFA glitch that ball went in at all. One of the funniest goals I've ever seen. An impossible. Adam Kubek said it was an impossible goal. But yeah, yeah, maybe we should go back to the start. So
a couple of things before we get into the meat of this. First of all, obviously it's you and I that are steering this ship right now, but this, like, all of you watching this right now were an enormous part of all this. You know, following this team for as long as you have, make this show as much yours as it is ours. Like, we would love to hear from everybody right now chiming in on the chat on the YouTube live stream. So please, 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 interact, and we'll try to roll through as many of your thoughts, comments, questions as we possibly can over the course of however long we decide to go here. But yeah, I mean, look, I took very complex
Bergwijn. I'm being called up. It was Bergwijn that made the pass that got Hadji in. Okay, whatever. Okay. But it was the Dutch relaxing that nearly got us back in the game.
Yeah. But I took very copious notes, JJ, throughout the course of this. I mean, I was on it. Lord. I was ready.
Did you read any articles by Henry Bushnell?
Jesus. I don't understand what is your problem, huh? With his writing.
There's nothing. I think he's great. I just
because
thought...
you're upset because I cited his article about the change, about what his proposal would be for the change to the 48-team format. And then shortly after that, The Guardian, I think, had a report that it's being considered. And so now you've retreated into your corner and you're swinging, like a wounded animal.
Just from a show standpoint, start the show with math. Yeah, great.
Yeah, the most exciting group stage that maybe we've ever had because of what Match Day 3 had presented us from a drama standpoint. And it's all going to change in 4 years. But let's not talk about that. No one cares about the fact that we're not going to see that kind of drama ever again in this tournament. No, no, no. We'll move on to something far more interesting in JJ's mind, like Y and X axis. Let's talk more about that. All right, let's go through it here. So I've got, go through this almost not quite minute by minute, but I've got everything laid out in front of me here. I mean, look, it's where you have to start. Third minute. The ball is kind of pinging around in the box. It winds up, I think, on the foot of Anthony Robinson, who just sort of, I guess he picks out Pulisic. I don't know if it was luck or what, but next thing you know, like, you're kind of still just settling in, ready to take this one in. And there's Christian Pulisic one-on-one with the keeper. It's saved. My initial instinct was upset, but then also kind of like, well, I mean, look where he was with the ball. He's probably offside anyway, but no,
he wasn't.
He's clearly being played onside. It's not even close. There would be no review. If we're going to talk about the Mount Rushmore of missed opportunities throughout U.S. soccer, there's Wando and we could go through some others, but like, it's hard to put a third minute chance on that list, but boy, you get your best player in space with a chance to kind of right out of the gate, take a game by the scruff of the neck and you miss it. That one's going to sting. It just is.
I thought that was McKennie that hooked it back in.
Maybe it was. I'd have to.
Yeah,
go
but you're right.
The game just ended.
He's got a score, but
it's a great save too. It really is.
Did you back him to score? Not really. And that's a major point. Whenever we get into those positions, I have zero faith that net is going to rattle.
I mean, it's with him one-on-one with the keeper. I don't know. I'll take my chances with Christian Pulisic. I just will. It's a great save. Like, I don't mean to make it sound like he blew it. It's a little bit of a tough angle. He doesn't have a ton of space as the keeper's rushing out at him. Their keeper, by the way, was excellent in this game, I thought. He kicks his leg out and makes the save. Like, it's not, I don't know that Christian did something wrong necessarily. Maybe there's people who know far more than I do about this stuff that'll tell me, no, he should have rounded him. I don't know.
No, I think
just thought it was a good save.
It's a little bit central. He wants to make him work a little bit, but he doesn't do it. And, you know, it's a good save, but what a start that would have been. And I thought generally the US did kind of start well. Like, we had the first corner.
That was third minute. Go to the eighth minute. They take that quick throw in, which I love. Pulisic speeding down that wing. Great cross. But like,
nobody there.
Nathan Ake's there for the Dutch and he heads it clear. Like, you know, they've got the Dutch have, there's talent on that team. And,
yeah, the decision to start Ferreira was forced upon. I mean, when you look at his options, the options weren't great. Once Sargent couldn't dress, it was a problem. And I wouldn't like, Hadji Wright didn't do anything to fill me with joy. I mean, there's an argument that Hadji Wright did enough in the Iran game and in his showing in that he shouldn't have come on at all for the US. But we don't have that many options, particularly at centre forward. But Ferreira didn't do very much in that first half. And then the other decision was to drop Cameron Carter-Vickers and bring Zimmerman back in, which I don't understand either. Like, was there something?
I mean, would you say, like, I think I agree with you, but I don't know. Like, were either of these decisions? Okay, like, let's start with the Ferreira one. Can we go through one at a time before, like, you hit both? Like, so they started Ferreira today because Sargent can't play. I don't know. Is it one that you kill Berhalter for? Like, what are his options? Like,
he could
after
play
Hadji
way
Wright
centrally.
Last game, no, I guess, like, but if that doesn't work, I don't know if that's the right way of thinking about it, but, like, is now the time to be experimenting with a thing that you have not done in a year and a half?
Yeah, but is now the time to put in a striker that you've lost faith in that hasn't had a minute.
He hasn't played yet in the tournament.
Right. So that's a risk of its own. Also, the center back issue.
But that's what I'm saying, is like, there are only bad options. So I don't know that I can kill a guy for just kind of choosing one. I don't know, like, which one of these is right. We've seen all of the options with the exception of Weah down the center, but we've never seen that. So there's inherent risk in doing something that you've never done before in the round of 16 of the World Cup.
But like, what I would say is, if you've got a hole in a pipe that's gushing water into your apartment, right? But you don't have the exact thing that can seal it. You try something else. You just do it because that's what you've got at hand.
But to him, Ferreira was that something else. We have not tried him yet.
Well, I guess so. But the centre backs, so Cameron Carter-Vickers, Zimmerman comes back in. Like, once the Dutch had realized we're going to go man for man and stop them doing the things in midfield that we like to do, or at least make it harder for us to do those things, then there was going to be a lot on the centre backs to try and play passes, you know, and we just saw the limitations of both Ream and Zimmerman in the passing game. I mean, both of them had some really poor moments. Ream passed straight to the aforementioned Daley Blind, who we'll get to. And the Dutch broke on us down the field. That was before the goal. And I felt that was the warning. I was like, if we do that, we're going to be in trouble. And the Dutch on the break, I thought, were excellent. And LVG got his tactics right.
Yeah, they were ruthless. That takes us to the 10th minute. I mean, as it was transpiring, you know, the Dutch quick passing, quick movement from all the way at the back to all the way up front. I mean, as it was going down, I was watching the game with my friend Pat, and it hadn't happened yet. They were kind of working their way up to the field. And I remember I said to him something like, oh God, like you could kind of feel it building. There was one moment once they got to around midfield, you could see that the US were now trying desperately to get back. And it was just going to be a matter of whether or not they did, or whether or not the Dutch's finishing on whatever this attempt was going to be was ruthless, or if it was going to just be a missed opportunity. But they were ruthless all game long. I mean, this was just a well-worked goal. And ultimately, JJ, the Dumfries cutback to Depay, to Memphis Depay, is what finished it off. But, you know, sometimes goals don't happen at the point of attack. Sometimes a goal happens somewhere else. And I hate saying it because he's probably been their best player in this tournament. But, boy, the replays just – they do not do well for Tyler Adams.
No. I mean, it's not like one of those where, oh, out of nowhere – Depay nips in on his blind side. No. I mean, he watches him all the way. And that makes it very, very difficult for you to defend him on that. It makes it very difficult for him to defend if he's not going to try. Like, he just watches him. And I don't know if that's fatigue. Sometimes when you're playing, and I've done it, obviously I have not played in a World Cup or anywhere near that.
Tell us how your experiences relate to this round of 16 moment for the United States.
Sorry. Well, while I'm explaining it, you can look up some Henry Bushnell stuff. So sometimes like players, when they're tired, they do switch off or they gamble. They think that ball's not coming back, but he's got to expect it's going to get cut back. He's got to read that, and he doesn't. And I think he's similarly at fault on the second goal. I know I'm jumping ahead, but I might as well mention it now. He's got to realize that cross can't go in. He's got to cut that cross out, and he makes no real effort to do so. And who pops up? Only the man that I have smeared and praised in not quite equal measure. Old man Blind.
I'm still waiting for the praise. I don't know if...
I did praise him. I said like the stats show that so a lot goes through him. So should we be worried? But on the other hand...
And then you resoundingly responded to that question with absolutely not. We should be exploiting him.
And we didn't. Now, is that my fault? Probably not. I wasn't playing. Brett Westphalen.
He wasn't as easy to exploit as we thought.
Maybe. I don't know. There was times in that first half.
One moment down the right where
there was two or three moments.
Dest skinned him. And I remember saying we've got to do more of that. But we had a nice combo
1-2 with Wea and someone else. Was that the Dest? Maybe that was the Dest one. There was another one where we got in behind, but you look at Ake and you look at Blind there, and I'm thinking, get into that gap. Do something in there. Now, the quick diagonal, the diagonal pass into that place was never on because of the defenders we had. Or I was going to say the defenders we had on. I'm not sure we have defenders that can play those passes. But like for Dest to get high, you know the way Dest got really high against Iran? That never happened, like where he could get high and almost stay there. That never happened really against the Dutch because they had such a threat going the other way.
No, it was that time. I mean, we'll go through it here, but at times it was hard to watch us do our thing in that first half. It was the Dutch just looked so comfortable.
We gave a lot of ball away as well, I think, Andrew. Brett Westphalen says our squad seemed very small against the Dutch. I thought physically we got a bit beaten up at times, which hasn't really happened. And again, I wonder how much that is tiredness.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. That didn't strike me too much. I mean, there was, you know, Dutch had a couple yellows. I don't know. Maybe. We've talked so much, JJ, about the U.S.'s kind of lack of incisiveness at the end of a move. They get into the box and things just fizzle. Yeah. And I thought, I don't know if you remember this one specifically, but I made a note of it in the 17th minute. Anthony Robinson, you know, something we didn't see against Iran. He had a great first touch, gets himself into position, gets into the box, but then he tries to make that last pass, which gets deflected. And I'm kind of watching it and I'm screaming at the TV, be selfish. Just for once, someone just be selfish. Put something on net. Mm. This like intricate moves within the box, it's gone for nothing time and time again. Like, just, I don't know. I'm not saying like from 30 yards out, start bombing ones on net, but like Robinson's 16 yards out, maybe he can curl one. Like there's a window where it can be done, but he tries to make kind of like a little touch pass and it gets just tipped away. And it's like, okay, well now we're back at midfield with Ream and Zimmerman passing back and forth. Let's try that again. Like, I don't know. Sometimes I just wish that there was a little more selfishness. We talked about it in which game was it? The England game, I think, with Tim Weah when he had an opportunity in the box. You know, and he tries to make that last pass. And sometimes, yes, there's I'm not saying that like never look for that ball. Yeah, you want to try to get yourself the easiest opportunity possible. But like if it's not clicking for you at a certain point, I just wish we had more guys who would just be willing to do that sometimes.
Can I fast forward to, which now seems like a lifetime ago, but the end of the first half where we're 1-0 down, but we really seem to be on top. We had the way a shot.
Yeah, that was in
Knoppert.
The 43rd.
What's that?
That was in the 43rd, was that way a rocket.
Yeah, no, it was a standard save for Knoppert, but it was a good strike. And I felt like we were maybe getting into it, you know, because that was just a minute beforehand. We had Tim Weah burning Daley Blint. And then we had on the 44th minute, we had that big chance where Dest just goes slaloming through. And again, doesn't get the shot off, doesn't get that final clinical piece to the game. I know, obviously, they broke down the field and Gakpo versus Ream, but that didn't come to nothing. And then the goal, just the sucker punch right before halftime.
Oh, backbreaker. What a killer.
Yeah. Switched off again on a throw-in. And I do think Tyler Adams has to... Serginho Dest...
I thought this... I mean, to me, I looked at that and thought, Dest, like, what's he looking for?
Yeah.
Is he not paying attention to anything around him? Like, he's going to let Daley Blint just kind of
ghost
walk,
past
post through?
And, you know, we heard so much from Jenny Taft, who was telling us how... By the way, Jenny's got so embedded in the camp, she's now calling him Serge. Okay. I hadn't heard that one before, but... So Serge was so up for this game. It was the most important game of his life, et cetera, et cetera. And for that to happen, you know, it was, did you see when Berhalter took him off, he kind of had a special word with him as he was substituting him, because I think he was struggling really mentally after that goal, because it was just a night that did not go right for him, considering the billing he had given the game in his own mind.
Yeah. I mean, like you said, he was pretty clear on it, called it the biggest game he's ever played in his entire life. Which is probably true for, I'd say, almost every guy on that field, maybe with the exception of Pulisic in a Champions League final.
Can I get to the chat just for 1 second? Guys
yeah,
are
please.
Already, I mean, they have already moved on almost to what's going to come next, and we will get there.
Oh, we'll get there.
Yeah, but there's the big Triple G conversation.
Oh, God. Oh, boy.
So Mark is upset. Can anyone explain why Fox is Samuel L. Jackson narrating a poem pregame? Who does that appeal to? A bizarre staple of American sports coverage I can't get my head around. I will say this, Mark. You are right. That's not necessarily, for me, that's not necessarily a staple of ESPN or of DAZN or any. It's a staple of Fox. Fox are like, who's the biggest Hollywood star we can get to give a vague poem that could be read to literally any team? You know, any team, and then play it over some recent highlights. That's what, like, that's
people,
their staple.
Like, people have a problem with this. Like,
it didn't get
I would
me.
Never I would never watch that and be like, what are we doing here? Is this soccer? Is this the kind of coverage we like? Who cares? All right. So they got Samuel Jackson. He's a famous American. They narrated our highlight package. Like, fine.
But no, I think it's a quirk that Fox keep doing it. It's like it's a formula.
I guess. I mean, I've seen, who is it, Kenneth Branagh? I've seen him narrate all kinds of Tottenham stuff. Like, I don't know. Is this unique?
No, it's not. It's Fox. Do go to it every single time. And it's kind of like you don't get hyped by it anymore. It's just like, oh, OK, who's the latest star that has no relation to soccer whatsoever? Who's going to talk vaguely about this team?
I don't know. You lose me on this one.
All right.
I'm
okay.
Fine with it.
We've
I'm
lost Andrew, guys. We've lost Andrew.
Because that's just, I can't possibly get worked up over that. I just can't.
Casey Adkins is a funny one. JJ, talk about poems, but not future World Cup formatting, Devani. That's a good one. Oh, that's good, Casey. But the point I would make just about that is, like, I'm so kind of into this tournament right now. I think it's like, I'm trying to avert my eyes from what's coming. I guess that's what I'm doing. Anyway, all right. Second half, halftime.
Yeah. Second half starts out, 49th minute, corner kick. This one was actually really well worked. Didn't see that very often throughout the course of this tournament or ever with this team. But, it, you know, Weston McKennie is one of your danger men on these opportunities. And sure enough, it finds his head, gets right to Ream from a couple feet out. And yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's cleared off the line by, I think it was Gakpo. And it just, will this goal ever come? You know, that was, if I'm kind of listing the big opportunities in this game, the Pulisic one is number one. This one, a pretty close second, I would think. You've beaten the keeper. Frustration, just like extreme frustration when you're the U.S. and you're facing, you know, we can say that the U.S. are close to the Dutch. I know a lot of us felt good going into this game about our chances, but like, let's just be honest about it. Like, the Dutch are the superior team. They're better than the U.S. That's fine. Like, that's a fine thing to admit. And so when you're in that situation, like, boy, wasting opportunities that you should be scoring on is just like a death blow. Like, it's just stuff that can't happen. One of these has to be converted.
No, you're right. And I do. I think in the second half, the Dutch had a few breaks on us where they should have cut us open, and they didn't. And that left us in it a little bit. And then there was almost like, I'm using the term football arrogance. They felt very comfortable in their skin where they were at in the game. And that actually, that got us back into it a little bit. But again, didn't create that much.
So can we talk about that for a sec?
Yeah.
I think you've hit on something that I definitely wanted to discuss. And that is the Dutch's approach to this game. From the time their goal was scored, really, but maybe even a little bit before then in the first 9 minutes, boy, they were entirely comfortable to not touch the ball in this game. I mean, it was clear what they were set out to do is, okay, and you know, if Louis van Gaal had like a roadmap of how he would have preferred this game to have gone, it was followed pretty much to a T, I would say. Score an early goal, and then we are going to set up defensively. We will allow them to pass the hell out of that thing. They're not breaking through us, and we're going to bite them again on a counter. We're going to finish them off late. Like, I mean, it's he was probably back in the locker room after that game in their team talk saying we did exactly what we set out to do today.
I think Van Gaal did his homework. I think he looked at the U.S. performances, generally speaking, against, you know, obviously in the group weaker opposition in the Welsh and the Iran game. And I think he saw a team that was, okay, this is what they can do. This is what they can't do. Let's make sure their midfield doesn't have it easy. Let's make sure their center backs see plenty of the ball, because they're not going to be able to play any dangerous passes. They're not going to be able to play any incisive passes. Let them pass it in front of us and we'll be fine. And they generally were.
So can I ask you a question about that?
Yeah.
I'd be curious for your thought on it. So the inability for Ream and Zimmerman to make what you refer to as the incisive pass. So they've got the ball. Like, if we had like a chart in front of us of where the ball was primarily handled through the course of this game, I would say right on that center line with those two guys being like the most deep red on that thing. Like, it was Zimmerman and Ream over and over at that midfield spot. We can all picture it in our head. Now you say the inability to make that pass. A, like, are the Dutch were cutting off passing lanes at a really efficient rate, I thought. They were making it very difficult to get to the fullbacks out
right.
wide. Like, that's where the U.S. wanted to go. So once that's happened, okay, we can sit here and we can talk about Ream and Zimmerman not being able to make the pass, but where is the ball supposed to go? Like, what's the pass that they're supposed to make? Shouldn't, you know, we saw it at times with Musa and Ferreira trying to drop in and give them that ball and down the center, but it felt like that wasn't there either. Like, you're right. I was frustrated watching those two guys, but like, then I took a step back and I was kind of thinking, well, the Dutch are shutting off passing lanes. Where are they going with this?
Right. But that's what I'm talking about. Like, say where you'd get your fullbacks higher and you'd look So what some teams do to break that, Andrew, and it's where we're probably not able to do it, is on one side of the field, they'll have maybe, they'll bunch up, they'll maybe have 5-6 passes, the midfield will keep it a little bit, and it'll come out, switch out to a midfielder or the centre back, having drawn in the opposition, who'll play a diagonal to the far side. Now, we weren't capable of doing that because our midfielders didn't get a second on the ball, weren't able to turn a lot of the time. And when we did, I mean, you can still see those moments in your mind. They were so few and far between. You're looking for that driven diagonal where Dest gets high or Robinson gets high. And that's a hard pass to play. It's a pass that, I mean, the opposition of a player who's done it for years for Liverpool in Virgil van Dijk. But it's a hard thing to do. And only really technically sophisticated teams can do it. And we're not that. Like I said, Dest never got into that area in behind Blind and Ake. Well, he did, but he didn't get in there enough, and he certainly didn't receive any diagonal balls. The other one you'd look for, Andrew, is that you'd look for, say, a player we don't have, a Mitrovic. So you'd go direct. Mm-hmm. You'd hit the center forward who hold it up, and then players would run off him.
That's the one. Like that. What you're saying that's it.
Yeah, can't do it. Right. Can't do it because Ferreira, he couldn't, I mean... He's not capable of that. He's not that type of player. I don't want
to. Which leads to the next question. Right. Was this the absolute worst game for Josh Sargent to get hurt?
Yeah, possibly. Possibly. He could drop into those gaps and kind of receive the ball as well. The question whether our Zimmerman and Ream can play those passes. I would think Ream can do it a bit better than Zimmerman, but okay. Say let's assume they can. It wasn't good missing Sargent. In fact, the start of the game, for some reason, I thought he'd be on the bench, and he wasn't.
He was in street clothes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, like during the game, I think it might even be in my halftime notes on Twitter. I was like,
he was probably devastated. Like it might have been hard for him to physically be there watching that.
I'm such an idiot for content, though. I saw him playing pool. So I thought, oh, he must be okay. You know, he was playing pool. Stupid.
The World Cup really makes us over.
Robert from LA. Everything. Disagree, JJ. LVG knew the Americans were uncomfortable with the ball, so they allowed them to have it and the Dutch defense would be all right. That's what I said.
Yeah, we agree on that.
What are you talking about? That's exactly what I just said.
Yeah, come on, get them, JJ.
Come on. No, I'm not in the mood for this because
I can see that.
I'm gutted. We're out. I'm doing the Mark Lawrenson thing. Mark Lawrenson, English raised player. He was played for Liverpool, who played for Ireland. And whenever he then went into his punditry role, he'd be talking about England and he'd go, them, you know, because he knew he'd get crushed by the Irish for saying us or we. And then he knew he'd get crushed by the English for saying them. Maybe I'm in that position right now.
He just like didn't know his pronouns were just like a mush in his head. I'll keep rolling here. You can stop
Colin Hennessy. You know who can hold up? Zardes, cue choral singing. He definitely can't, guys. Although we saw, is this mean to say that Hadji Wright was channeling Josie Zardes with that touch around the goalkeeper? I mean, Hadji Wright's touch was so far in the wrong direction and so far ahead of him on that play where he was played in by Bergwijn or whoever it was, that he almost ended up in Saudi Arabia. It was just dreadful.
Yeah, I think Joe Girardi has a thought or two on that one.
It's not what you want.
Not what you want. 50th minute, JJ. Matt Turner, who hadn't really been called into action all that much through the first three games of this tournament, moments here and there had to come up big. He was called into action today a little bit, especially in the second half as the U.S. had to press forward for that goal. 50th minute, Turner, important save, really important save to keep this one within a little bit of arm's reach. The deflection off Walker Zimmerman. Dutch crossing continued to really hurt the U.S. in this game. But Zimmerman, Turner kept them in it. Then 53rd minute, Musa does great to keep the ball, gets it to Gio Reyna, who we should probably talk about. Gets it to Reyna out wide, who played it to McKinney, but his shot goes well over the net.
I thought he should have done better with that. I know it popped up.
I thought so too.
Stu Holden was giving him a pass, but you got to work Knoppert from that range, and there wasn't anyone really close to him.
Yeah, I thought the same thing. I thought everything about that move, the way Musa was able to keep that possession, it was right on the sideline. Remember, he went to ground really early and was able to kind of hook the ball in, keep it in play, then pushed it upfield. Reyna, smart right pass that he made to McKinney. And, you know, it's not necessarily one that you expect anyone to score on. But, yeah, I would have liked to have seen them, like you say, at least work the keeper there. Then where are we now, JJ? 61st minute, poor free kick from Pulisic leads to a chance going back the other way for the Dutch. Matt Turner comes up with another good save. 71st was probably Matt Turner's, I mean, I guess I'll say his best moment of the tournament
Bergen
so
County,
far.
Bergen County Buffon, says Joseph Mara.
71st, Turner with that key double save. I mean, really just doing all he can to keep the U.S. in it. Maybe, you know, maybe it was a little bit of a self-created moment. As his initial save, he kind of put that rebound right back there to be smacked home for what I thought for sure was going to be a goal. I mean, in my head, I said, night, game over. But no, Turner again, he came up huge. If we came into this tournament thinking, okay, well, if nothing else, we know we've got a great elite shot stopper in net. I think he, for the most part, he validated that over the course of this tournament. I come out of this feeling really good about who we have back there, despite the fact that three goals went by him today. I mean, I don't really look at those three and say Turner's got to do better. I think we got what we hoped for and then some, I think, out of that guy.
I think the finance bro is comfortably our best goalkeeper. And, yeah. And you know, his kicking is not perfect. We saw that today. He had a touch that looked a little bit loosey-goosey.
We all clenched our butt cheeks just a little there, JJ.
Oh, we did. Sphincters tightening.
yeah.
But he did fine. He got it down the field. And his kicking has improved with his move to Arsenal.
Yeah.
So where are we going with this now,
so
Andrew?
Now we get to chaos. So now we get to the 75th minute. And now, like, my anger, now it's the point of the game when it's 2-0 and I'm starting to, like, it goes from like hopefulness of a comeback to frustration that it's not happening. Then if I take you through my psyche of how I work in a sporting event, like, now we're reaching the point of now I'm angry. I'm mad at everyone now. And when Haji Wright gets that ball played to him, I should read you my notes here word for word.
Oh, go on.
75th minute, Haji Wright with a all caps, and then I took the time to bold and underline Haji Wright with a trash first touch. That's my way of expressing rage during a.
I had a text
game.
From
trash.
I had a text from a friend about Haji Wright during the game, saying he's running like he's got a bricks on his back. Yeah, he just.
Yeah, that was a moment where I was just like, because, you know, we all stood up as that pass is being made to him from a Dutch player, from Bergwijn, and like, you think this is our avenue back. Like, there's time on the clock, you know, we're getting at least 6 minutes of stoppage time, we got 20 minutes here, let's go. And then you see that first touch and you think, this ain't happening. Like, what are we doing here? Like, not having that number nine, it's come back to bite us at a terrible moment. Like, this was peak frustration mixed with rage. But then it's a minute later and he goes and scores a goal that I don't even know how the physics of it allowed it to happen. It was almost the bizarreness of the Omar Gonzalez own goal against Trinidad. Like, how does this work? How is the ball in the net right now? I don't understand it, but I love it. Let's effing go.
That was a glitch. That the space-time continuum ripped apart, and everything we know about physics and the movement of time allowed that ball to glitch into the net. It reminds me of a goal that was scored against Ireland by the Dutch. I think it was Wim Kieft in 1988, where the ball was hit into the ground and it's going wide, but it takes some kind of top spin and then spins inside the post. And that was it. 1-0 Ireland lose. This one was absolutely, truly bizarre. It had a flavor of Omar Gonzalez's crazy own goal in Cuba, where,
yeah, that's what I just said.
Yeah, it did have that flavor.
Ridiculous.
But I think this was even more bizarre, Andrew, because you could see the touch that Gonzalez had on the ball. I've watched replays. Like, there's only a bit of heel, is it? I don't even know what part.
I'll give him the benefit of the doubt and say that it was by design. Yeah. But, and you know, I should say, in the build up to that goal, like, I know we can talk about Haji Wright in the finish, but like, we've been kind of underwhelmed with DeAndre Yedlin for the last few years. I'll tell you what, man, he came on as a sub, won back possession to help that goal happen. A few minutes later, I think he set up. Well, I mean, we'll go right to it. I think it was, well, what was it now? So that goal happens. And then, like, here we go. Momentum is back on the US's side. And sure enough, a minute and a half after that, Pulisic to Haji Wright again in space. It looks like he's going to be one-on-one with the keeper, but he can't quite get there. Nupper comes out and is able to clear it. And it was another one of those, oh, like just half a second. I mean, like, damn this game sometimes with the frustration of just like detail in the margins and just how close things can be.
Adam Kubek says, I think it was his toe / top of foot.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, we'll certainly, will you watch this again? How deep will you, can you rewatch highlights of a game that takes you out of the World Cup?
I can watch it again. I can definitely watch it again.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I've seen Julian Green's goal probably like 30 to 40 times.
I'll be all right with it. I would just say there's a mood growing in the chat, Andrew, where at some point we'll have to get to Reyna.
Yeah. Well, here, I'll finish out my notes and then we'll get in on certain specific players and stuff like that. I got nothing left other than 81st minute goal. Daley Blind all day to pick out a pass, and fittingly Dumfries is on the end of it. He was excellent. I'd say for the most part, Daley Blind was a net positive tonight for the Dutch. It's not exactly what was expected. I think we had hoped that maybe he would be someone who could be exploited. Not the case. His pass was gorgeous, and that was it. Lights out.
That was lights out.
A total gut punch because you just thought you had about 15 minutes or so there and it felt like there was momentum, but it was not meant to be. 3-1 is how it ends for the US, JJ. Frustrating stuff. So now we can go deeper now. You want to talk about Gio Reyna? If that's what the people want, let's go right to
people
it.
I let me just give my view on it. I didn't think it was controversial he didn't start. I didn't expect him to start. Now, I'm not saying that's the right decision. I just, from the accrued knowledge we have of Greg right now, who thought he was going to start this game?
Well, also, too, where exactly is he? Who are we taking out? Are we saying that he's going to be a false nine? He's going to play that position where Jesus Ferreira played? I mean, in hindsight, sure. I guess anything would have been better. But I just don't know. Greg didn't seem interested in experimenting in that way, which again, I kind of get that. Like that's something JJ, I mean, remember, like, wouldn't it be a little disingenuous of us to say, what's he thinking? Not trying that to start him at that position. Like that's the kind of stuff we used to get on Klinsmann for, where it's like, you get to the knockout stage of a Gold Cup and all of a sudden, like he's doing stuff that just like we've never seen before. And now we're out in the semifinals. Like, I don't know. I feel like I understand that not happening. I understand Reyna not playing that position that he has never played for us before.
Yeah. I mean, for me, like the whole idea was to bring him into the game. Like Greg talked in the pregame about the game state. So he came in at the right time. And I didn't see the place for him to start. I never expected Greg for him to start. And I think I just thought, hey, you know, he will come up. He will come in. He will come on. And he did. And I don't have a huge amount of issue with that. Now, the question is, did he make any difference?
Right. I'd say not really.
No, not really.
Now, look, that doesn't just because that happened. I would love to find out one day just what Gio Reyna's fitness was in this tournament, because it's very hard to sit here and judge the decisions that were made without knowing that. And the information has been mixed. We've heard, we've gone through it. Like, we don't need to revisit all that. But like, the fact of the matter is, we don't know. If we're ever able to find out that he was 100% fit and this idea that he was hurt is not a real thing, then sure, we can. Then I think it's fair to look at this differently. But we don't know right now. I mean, so it's hard for me to say like that he should have played more in this tournament or not. I don't know.
I mean, here's some of the stuff. Matt Graham, of course, Reyna should have started. So in that case, his hamstring goes, you only have to sub that position once. Is that sarcasm? Jimmy Skits, Reyna has been injured off and on for 6 months to a year. Why would he start? I mean,
and by the way, even when he was healthy, like, you know, we can go back, JJ, to some of our podcast that we did during qualifying. And like, I remember specifically talking about Reyna and Aaronson and saying like, these guys are great, but where, like, it's not, there's no natural fit here. Like, we're kind of loaded in one spot of the field, and it's hard to find exactly where these guys slot in as part of our starting 11. So yeah, I, again, it's frustrating that through the group stage, he only played 7 minutes. Like, if he was fully healthy, to me, that is not acceptable in three games that were on a knife's edge. Although Iran, I kind of get it, because you didn't really need Reyna when you're trying to, if their mentality was, we're going to defend the hell out of this lead, then it makes sense he wouldn't come in. But the two games before, if he was healthy, yeah, of course I would have wanted to see him more. I was clear on that.
Yeah. Austin Griffin, why change our system for an injury prone player like Reyna? So some people are saying Reyna should have played, it should have started at the 10. I mean, I just think it would have been a serious decision. You would have to rejig your entire attack in midfield to bring him in, to play him as a 10. I honestly think that there's, it happens in English football a lot. There's a kind of a cause celebre happens every tournament for England. And right now it's Phil Foden. Last at the Euros, it was Jack Grealish. Yeah. And I think we do this too as well. I think Reyna is a quality player. And I've said before, he does things we don't often, we don't often see from other US players. I get that. But I think Greg's been vindicated throughout this tournament by not starting him. And starting him now would have caused too much structural changes. And he's not 100% fit.
I'm of that opinion too. Again, I guess I don't know that we know. I mean, but that's sort of the way that I feel about this too.
Casey Atkins, Gio is just a scapegoat. Everyone's favorite player is the backup QB. There's a little bit of that in it too. And, but I don't want to criticize people either, because, you know, you've got your opinions, you're entitled to them. But again, I can see other systems where he starts, but not this one.
Yeah. I tend to agree. I tend to agree with you. Anyone else, JJ, that you wanted to kind of hone in on performances in this game? I mean, did you think, I know you talked a little bit about Pulisic.
I thought the chance, we're going to look back at that chance and we're going to grimace. Obviously he is too. I thought he was decent. I did think he carried a threat. Sometimes I just want him to do less. And just be off the ball and making runs and get onto the end of things. I think that's when he's been most effective at this tournament. Our fullbacks, I thought Robinson had his worst game in a US jersey. Unfortunately, he had it in this game, which is a World Cup round of 16, which is very unfortunate. Dest too. They're two players we need to be functioning highly, attacking and defending, and that didn't happen today. I thought the midfield genuinely looked tired. I thought Musa had that one great run on the sideline where he lost the ball, then he slid in, recovered it, and he started off an attack. I thought that was really good, but otherwise, not a great performance from him. He looked tired. He looked fatigued. I do think if there's a criticism of Greg, is that how we allowed that Iran game to be so fraught, so tense, so energy sapping when it should have been over at halftime or over in the middle of the second half. That really played in with the relatively quick turnaround. I think that really, really hurt us today in terms of our physical state and our fatigue.
Keep your comments coming. We would love to get to as many as we possibly can. I'm just kind of scrolling through Twitter, JJ. I saw this from at USMNT Thoughts. They say, I think we can officially say Jesus Ferreira over Ricardo Pepi was an insane roster decision. What do you think? Can we do that kind of hindsight stuff now? I mean, would Pepi have been a difference here? Look, Ferreira wound up only giving them 45 minutes, and there was nothing really positive to say about it. So, yeah, I guess you can go back and say stuff like that now. But again, like, I don't know. Am I wrong for sort of viewing a lot of these guys, Wright, Pepe, Ferreira? I kind of view all of them in sort of a similar light. Like,
I think you're wrong there.
Okay.
Wright is not like any of them.
I don't mean the type of player. I mean the caliber of player, like the regard with which I hold them. Like,
okay.
They're all kind of in the same category to me. Like, look, I understand, like, it's fair to get worked up about it. Like, that's why we're fans. Like, we all kind of latch on to certain narratives and players and storylines. And so, like, I'm not saying that at USMNT Thoughts or anybody is wrong to be worked up. I'm just saying, from my perspective, like, I don't know that like, this is an entirely different team if Pepe is there instead of Ferreira.
I'm not sure it is either. Pepe did have, you know, that late run in the
sure.
of form in the Dutch league. But then again, Haji Wright's had his run for Antalyaspor. Matt Graham, if Pepe had played, people would be saying that bringing him instead of Ferreira was the wrong move. I certainly think that would have been part of it. Mm-hmm. If you want to say much of a muchness between bringing Pepe or Ferreira, I'd be happy to close the book on that. I would say that is a fair estimation. We need within the next 4 years to develop or for a player to come through that is a very, very good striker alongside probably another center half and another, maybe another attacking midfielder.
So I was going to ask you now. So what happens now? Like, if the people want this kind of thing, I don't know, you're monitoring the chat. I don't have it in front of me. If they want some kind of like, look ahead or retrospect, like, I feel like the next pod that we do is the one where we actually sit down and like sort through, okay, what do we need to address, like all that kind of, like the retrospective of all this and where we go. But if people want like initial thoughts, I'm happy to give some.
Well, there's a lot of stuff, you know, about PFOC, PFOC, PFOC. I mean, like, two says PFOC, PFOC, PFOC. But look at PFOC, PFOC, PFOC's last seven games in the Bundesliga, or look at his form. It had fallen off a cliff. And Greg never really got into him. Now,
yeah, I mean,
now he never really got into Haji Wright either. So right. There was something really kind of...
He was never into Tim Ream.
There was something very idiosyncratic about those choices. He lucked out. He got it right with Tim Ream because it seemed obvious. And on the others, maybe he was being a bit too clever.
I was always a PFOC guy. So if people are saying that, I won't. I'll stand with some of that, sure. But again, like, is that much of a much? Like, am I doing what with PFOC, what USMNT Thoughts is doing with Ricardo Pepe? Like, are these guys all in the same category? Like, to me, PFOC is a little bit different, but, you know, people may say Ricardo Pepe is as well. I don't know. I guess I wouldn't lose my mind over that. Yeah, I don't think that's why we're out in the round of 16. Like,
I think our striker pool is
it's shallow. There's a lot of urine in that kiddie pool.
It's shallow. There's urine in it, and there's people who are wearing those inflatable life armbands,
swimmies
that are really. We got to do something about that. So I guess
how does that happen? Like, I wish we could just. I mean, we'll have to like sit down and really start looking through, you know, the next group. The next wave of U.S. talent that's going to be in their early 20s and late teens. But
Austin Griffin makes a good point, Andrew. Spain and Germany don't have a number nine either. These guys are difficult to find. And one of the conversations coming out of this World Cup is that
look at Germany, though. Like, we just did a whole pod about how they were missing that is maybe why they're out of this World Cup.
But there's a dearth of number nines. Like someone was saying that, like, Haaland and Kane are like the last of a dying breed because of the way formations have changed. And there's been a lack of emphasis on having like one single number nine, and his job is to put the ball in the net.
Well, whether or not we call him a number nine, you can call whatever you want, but I think we're talking about goal scorers, guys who, like, there may not be number nines. Like, you can call Phil Foden whatever you want. It's probably not a number nine, but we know a goal scorer when we see one. The U.S. has some playmakers. You know, they have guys who are great. In terms of work rate, I put us up against any nation on earth. You know, we have guys who will win back possession, who will run for days. Like, those are great qualities. But who are our goal scorers? Like, you know, maybe they're not, you know, you can look at other nations and say maybe they don't have true number nines like of Lewandowski or Kane. By the way, Harry Kane, watch him play. Is he even a number nine anymore? He's their best passer. He's setting up goals. He's not scoring them. So, but we know him when we see him. And like the U.S. just, they don't have that. They just don't have that guy who's a goal scorer. They need that.
Yes. Another thing is maybe we need René Mühlenstein. René Mühlenstein in the Ronaldo Messi book that I've been reading, and you can watch the video here on the YouTube. Apparently, took Ronaldo aside and told him that he had to be better as a finisher at Manchester United, and he was suspended and he had an international break. And with the suspension plus the international break, he had like 5 weeks where he was doing nothing. And every day him and Mullenstein will go out and practice finishing. Maybe we need some kind of hot housing of our forward players to create some kind of goal scoring conveyor belt.
Sure. I'll try anything. Yeah.
Michael Anthony Durand the second. Memphis is a goal scorer, not your traditional number nine. Yeah, right. Correct. That's what we're saying.
Right. We're saying like you can label them however you want.
We don't have goal scorers. We don't have a traditional goal scorer. We don't have a non-traditional goal scorer. We don't have a conservative goal scorer. We don't have a libertarian goal scorer. We don't have a Mormon goal scorer. We don't have a Christian goal scorer. We don't have a goal scorer.
I mean, do you see a guy on this team right now who can become that? Like if Pulisic goes somewhere else and maybe they play him a little bit differently,
yeah,
and
sure,
he become that? Can Ricardo Pepi, you know, he didn't get the chance at this World Cup, but he's still extremely young and he's in Europe and you feel like the trajectory, hopefully, it's hard to say exactly, but you hope it's going in the right direction. Maybe, who knows, maybe it is him at the next World Cup. There's a good chance it might be some guy that we're not even aware of yet.
Aaron Davis, Eddie Howe did it with Almiron. What a job Eddie Howe is doing.
It's a fine point.
Yeah, and he had a great tournament with Saudi Arabia as well. Very unlucky not to get out of the group, Eddie Howe and the guys.
Wow.
Matthew Hopp. Hoppy?
Wow. That name diminished, really. I mean, he's had some injury issues.
He's at Middlesbrough now, so, you know, he's bound to kick on from that. Julio Vega, old religion naming JJ. Okay, let's get to it. Let's get to the Triple G conversation, Andrew, because this is the one that's going to invigorate the live chat. Oh boy. Right, thoughts.
I mean, there was a report from, I believe it was Michelle Giannone. I don't know if it's a full like this is happening or if it's kind of being suggested as a possibility that no matter what happened in this tournament, the U.S. and Berhalter are going to be going in their separate directions. I have no idea if that's true.
Wow, I did not see that.
Yeah, if you look it up, you know, you'll see, you can find it as I'm talking here. Maybe you should look that up and let me know if I'm off on that at all. But I don't know if it's true, and I don't know if it was really how it was exactly said, if it was said as any kind of fact that this is a thing that is going to happen or if it's just something that is a possibility. I guess it's not even fair to speculate on what is or isn't going to happen. I think it's more about what we think should happen. I mean, if you think that it's, I think for me in this tournament, like if this tournament was going to be the measuring stick by which we judge Berhalter and if he should continue or not, I think the line for me was pretty clear. If we didn't get out of the group, you could say goodbye, and I think it would make sense. We got out of the group, didn't give up a goal in open play during group play. If it was still him, oh boy, I see torches being lit. They are forming at the gates, JJ. If they choose not to fire Greg Berhalter after this World Cup, I would be okay with that. If he's our manager at the next Gold Cup next year, I would be okay with that. There, I said it.
Okay. Let's go through the comments then.
Oh, dear God.
Austin Griffin, manager shouldn't last more than one cycle. End of discussion.
I mean, if people think that as a rule, then sure. Like, I won't fight. Like, if you think that, you know, if Yogi Löw wins you a World Cup and you believe, okay, well, your job is done, on to the next one, then like, fair enough. Then I'm not going to fight you off of that opinion. I don't know that I necessarily agree with that.
Kyle Dawson, Triple G in. Casey Adkins, got today woefully wrong. Wesp, GGG out. Eddie Sanchez, Marsh for manager. Not happening. Marsh is a young manager, relatively speaking. He's also at the top of his game. International football would be a step down for him.
Can I bring up a point real quick?
Yeah,
I was going to save this for our next pod when I thought we'd really go deep, but F it. We're talking about it now.
F it.
So I've been thinking about it a little bit over the last couple weeks, and I've been thinking about guys like Southgate at England, who's taken them to a World Cup semifinal and a European championship, and the fans generally don't like him as their manager. I've been thinking about Didier Deschamps, who has gotten to a European final and won a World Cup. And fans generally are not thrilled with the job he does as their manager. I was talking to a friend of mine who's Australian, who's saying he was so glad that Australia had advanced to this stage because a lot of fans wanted Graham Arnold out as Australia's manager, which he didn't think was fair. You know, another guy, Australia majorly overachieving. They're going to play later today. There are others too that I'm forgetting now. I had a list written down, but the takeaway that I had from this in the end was that I think most fan bases of international teams don't like their manager. And so I'm trying to think of why that is. And I think the reason is just the inherent nature of tournament play. Like you watch the way JJ, you look at the players on that Dutch team. Okay. We can say that, you know, we don't think that they're a threat to go on Roberto Martinez. That was another one at Belgium. No one was happy with that. You know, he was their manager. Tata Martino, who was everybody wanted him to be the US's manager. He was a disaster at Mexico. It's their worst era in history.
Okay.
So like, I think back to what I was saying, look at the Dutch today, you know, loaded with guys who are playing in elite leagues all over the world. And how did they play? They put 10 guys behind midfield and were comfortable to just let the U.S. pass the ball around. They weren't trying to play football today. Like that was really, they were happy to let us have possession and play on the counter. And that was how they're going to win. Like the way, what you want to see of your team in international tournaments, it's not going to be beautiful, free flowing football. Like that's just, you're asking a lot of guys who never play with each other to suddenly come in and have this coherent system that's a thing of beauty and fun to watch. Yeah, Brazil has done it. Brazil's done it because that's Brazil. Spain did it, certainly under Del Bosque, but that was a group of you know, an entire team that was playing on just two different teams between Barcelona and Real Madrid that had this system drilled into their heads for years.
The Swiss did it yesterday.
I mean, yes.
The Japanese do it.
It happens in moments, but I'm saying the teams that go on and win these things and succeed, it's just not always going to be a beautiful style of play to win tournaments. We talk about that all the time. So, you know, people get mad about Berhalter. Guess what? They're going to get mad about the next guy. And then that guy's going to get fired and they're going to get mad about the next guy. Like the, I think that's just kind of part of like the international game that you're just not, you don't always love the way it looks.
Kyle Moran. Oh no, here we go with Triple G Andy.
Fine. Call me that all you want. Like I don't have to go defend my record. I've been disappointed with a lot of things that they've done, but like when push comes to shove, I don't know. Like you want me to S on this guy who's won trophies for this team, got us back into a World Cup, got to a round of 16 out of a difficult group and played well against the Dutch. Like, what am I supposed to say? Oh, but he didn't bring Pepe. Fire him. I don't care about all the trophies and getting to a World Cup and advancing. Like, we didn't bring a guy who's okay to a tournament. Like, is that what you want? Like, again, I don't want to get too angry about it because the criticisms of him, they're fair. Like, I do get it. But this idea that, like, you're dumb if you want him. Stop. It's not like that.
Joseph Mara, this is balanced. Joseph Mara, like Fox, fair and balanced. Greg did enough in this tournament, but in my opinion, he doesn't do enough in-game management to warrant him staying the manager. That being said, it seems harsh to sack him. Trey Brown.
That's fair.
If you can get a better coach, why wouldn't you? Triple G doesn't hold his team back per se, but he doesn't raise its ceiling. I don't know. I think I would give him enough credit. I would give him credit in this point. I think they play dramatically better football than anything that was served up over Klinsmann, Reina, or even before that under Bob Bradley or whoever you want. Dramatically different. Now, hey, they have better players. So with better players, more is expected.
I don't think you can entirely underrate what Berhalter has helped do from a recruitment standpoint. Dest, Musa, these are big gets. I think that's also important.
Jorge Ramirez, love you guys, but Triple G is junior varsity. Nick says, I love John Herdman, but he made mistakes as well. Kyle says, Triple G can't go out and score himself. I did think there was things today that Greg Berhalter has no control over. None whatsoever. Anthony Ortiz, I've been a fan for 20 years. Come on, man. We have young talent. Let's match the talent with a better coach. It's reasonable. The Golden State Warriors did that with Kerr over Jackson. Anthony, tell me who the coach is. You know, the best coaches want to be in club football because that's where the money is and that's where the day-to-day ability to change things is. That isn't the case in international football. Give me a name. Guys, start giving me names in the comments. Also, hit like. Likes.
No, again, like, I mean, the U.S. fan base, again, like,
Easton, I think... Bielsa, Marsh, Martinez. Martinez. Potch.
Roberto?
Potch is not taking the U.S. men's national
team. Mauricio Pochettino is not taking this job. Like... I guess if we throw
neither
him a
is Bielsa.
If we throw him a boatload of money, but I don't think that that's where he's interested in his career going.
Can you imagine Bielsa?
It's not realistic to me.
Can you imagine Bielsa as a U.S. men's national team manager, like refusing to speak in English and having an interpreter? How that would drive some parts of this country absolutely insane.
I mean, like I understand. For Berhalter, it was always going to be an uphill climb because the manner in which he got this job was weird. You know, like Jay Berhalter being part of U.S. soccer. Remember, JJ, we read, like, when he was hired, you and I on the podcast, we thought this is, like, we read the parameters through which they had narrowed the scope of their search. And it felt like, when you read through that stuff, it felt like the search was almost rigged for him. You know, so I understand that there was outrage over Tata Martino not being really considered because he didn't speak English. Like, yeah, I do. I get it. Like we were at the time, we were like that as well. But like where, I don't know, maybe things would have been different. But again, like Tata Martino just presided over the worst era of Mexican soccer that we've seen in 50 years, 60 years, whatever. So
Obakeng, the progressive teams barely get time to train to make it perfect. That's why most international teams go defensive.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. I completely agree with that. So I don't know. Like, look, if Potch suddenly said, you know what, I'd consider this, then I would say, well, then let's, okay, then I will, sure, I'll change course on my opinion. But I think you're right, JJ, like the guy.
I personally don't think there's a golden bullet here, guys. Golden bullet, silver bullet. That's the phrase. It's been a long, long few days. There's no silver bullet that we get a manager in and suddenly we're a million miles better or much better than what the guys, what the supporters want. You know, we want a coach that matches the talent. I don't see that happening.
It's not entirely clear to me either. I mean, look, if Jesse Marsh winds up, if things go south at Leeds and he winds up losing his job, then let's have a conversation. But like, is Jesse Marsh quitting his job at Leeds to take over at the US? He's going to voluntarily leave the English Premier League when we're still four years away from another World Cup. Like he's prepared to do that. Like, let's see how, if Triple G presides over the next Gold Cup, or if we're in Copa America in 2 years, if we get invited into that, something like that, and it's not going well, then that's like, there's enough time to fire him and reassess and bring in another manager. But I don't know, unless, like we said, unless I forget who it was that said earlier that they just believe after each cycle, it's time for a change.
Then okay.
But like, I don't know. I don't see that.
Here's two from the chat. Andrew Walshlag. Did you guys know the U.S. has a set piece coach? I didn't know that until I heard it on the broadcast of the last game. I wouldn't have known that if I watched the set pieces.
Yeah, my buddy, after they said that, my buddy that I was watching with said, and he has been promptly fired.
Oren Davis, Jim Curtin. He knows the current players and MLS. I mean, down the line, maybe, but Jim Curtin's probably a guy who thinks, I'm going well here. Maybe there's a chance I get a job in Europe or a few years in Europe. And if he takes an international job, that's not going to happen.
That's an interesting one, because I do think that Jim Curtin, because of the success that he's had with the U.S., with the union, he would test the Euro snob nature of some of this fan base. I know that I feel bad using that term because I have some of that in me as well. But like, would those people be on board with him?
Andrew.
Or is it sort of a blanket thing that they're just not going to want a manager who's coming from MLS who has not won a trophy?
Right.
Other than, he did win a supporter shield. I shouldn't say that.
But hang on a sec. Would they want a coach who plays that style of football? I mean, his style of football isn't exactly, I mean, it's good and it's effective, but it's not exactly, it's not even Greg Berhalter style of football. It's not slick passing and so
score a lot of goals
for sure. But you know, John Courtman, the manager wasn't the issue during this tournament. The finishing is just wasn't good enough, which is from not having a good outright striker. Yeah, I think so. Certainly I think so. But also crosses that don't hit the first defender would be pretty helpful too. Thoughts on Brian Smetcher? Brian Smetcher would...
It'd be great for the press conferences.
Oh, he would. He would.
Like, I mean, we got an opportunity. We didn't finish it.
I don't know what guys want from me on the Twitter. I mean, I'm trying my best, darn it. Aren't I? Playing the players I'm playing. We did our best. We don't deliberately try and miss, you know.
Goodbye. In the chat or anyone listening, if you're listening to this later as a podcast and you want to tweet us, I would love to compile the list of the greatest lightning rods in U.S. soccer history. Like Dribble, it's just funny that Berhalter, if you look at him, he's kind of like, he's a fairly mild-mannered, kind of unassuming guy, like not really a controversial person. He's not like brash, really. He is the definitive lightning rod to me in the history of this program. I wonder who else is even on the list. I guess
Michael
Klinsmann.
Bradley.
Klinsmann was Bradley's a good one. Josie Klinsmann was Altidore. A huge lightning rod.
Josie Altidore's there.
I mean, do any of these reach Triple G level? Like the conversations about him have just been fascinating for since the day he was named.
Gabriel Linas, Triple G has the team controlling the ball well. That's progress. Is it possible that Berhalter will learn an alternate tactical approach and grow as a manager between now and 2026? Like, I don't mind his tactics per se. I think the issue with Greg often is just team selection and an overriding sense that he has got a vendetta against one of Claudio Reyna's sons, you know. So it's
we don't know if that's true.
Well, I don't think he does either, but that's the perception. Well, there's got to be something wrong. How can he not play him? You know, there's a lot of, I don't know. Andrew Hayes, Irv Renard. I mean, I know he's sexy right now and sexy generally.
Almost literally.
Yeah, almost literally. But no, I don't think so. Michael Anthony Duran II, he got everything wrong today. I mean, he didn't get everything wrong today. It's amazing, though, how there are protected species within the ecosystem of soccer. I have not seen one comment about how Tyler Adams was at fault or possibly at fault for both of the first two goals.
I don't know if I feel he was at fault for the second.
I think that cross has got to be cut out.
I look at Dest and I just think you're letting a guy just coast through you on a carbon copy of a goal that happened just earlier in the game.
Like, CU, Reyna and Aronson, lack of time or starts is criminal when our midfield was clearly exhausted. I think there's something in that.
That screams of hindsight to me.
No, I think in the Aronson shout, yes, because of his energy, his ability to get around. I mean, Weston McKennie, did he finish any game? He left every game with about 30 minutes left.
Right. But like we came in, everyone's analysis of this game, JJ, was if the U.S. was going to win, it's because our midfield has been so good throughout the course of this tournament. McKennie, Musa, and Adams. Nobody was calling for a change in the midfield. No one.
Right.
To say that now, that feels, I don't know, that feels unfair to me.
It does a little bit.
It's a tough conversation. Like, but look, I know I'm fired up on one side of this, like I'm Jay Berhalter, but like, I get it. Like, I do get it. Like, there were performances during qualification when the U.S. was away from home that were frightening. So like, I can see it. I just am trying to look at a bigger picture of progress being made from where this was inherited after Sarakin to where we're at now, where like, you know, the way that the U.S. are kind of dominating, I shouldn't say CONCACAF. Obviously, we finished behind Mexico and Canada top CONCACAF. But in terms of, you know, the trophies that have been won, the only team remaining to get out of the group in World Cup play. I don't know. I don't feel like we're headed in the wrong direction. If I felt that way, I would say, yeah, we have to make a change. But I don't know that I can. Can anyone say that? Like, we feel like this is going in the wrong direction right now. I don't know.
Harley dude, hire Mick McCarthy or Martin O'Neill. No.
What?
Oh, no. Clearly a joke. Old Andy Sarakin.
We'll never know.
We'll never know. Oh, God. What do we do here, Andrew? How do we...
JJ, I was so up for this game, as all of you were. Like, I texted you last night. I was on my train ride home from work, and like, I was just sitting there on the train. I was like, okay, do I want to listen to a podcast or like... throw on a movie on Netflix, throw on a REITs. And I just got steered towards YouTube and I went crazy. And I just went deep on like all my favorite US soccer moments on YouTube, just watching all of them. I was so, so ready for this. I'm just so, so empty that it's done. I was not ready to stop watching this team. That's the problem with being in love with a team that never plays. Like, so now what? Like, okay, I'll love watching these guys as they go back to their club teams, but I want to keep watching this team. And so now we got to like wait for them to play five games in a Gold Cup. It's just like, you understand why this fan base is so like, it's why I'll never criticize the fan base for being as crazed, sometimes irrational, obsessed. I'll never criticize them for it, because it's like when you finally get the taste of it, you go crazy, because like you've been waiting so long. Like if you're in the desert and you haven't had a sip of water in months, finally you get some, you dump it all over your face, you go nuts with it. Like that's how it is to be a fan, to be an obsessive fan like US fans are of an international team. It's like when you get that little smidgen of it, you need to inhale it. And so like I get it. I love the passion around this team and I love the conversation around it. It just sucks that now we got to wait and wait and wait. But we'll keep the debates going. We'll keep the arguments going. We'll keep the analysis going, because I know how passionate this fan base is about this team, because I feel it too. And you feel it too. So it'll still, even though this is over and this is the moment that we had been waiting for all these years, it will still be fun to talk about the direction that all this is headed, because the games ended today for the U.S., but like the debate and all that, it is still firmly, firmly underway. That's not going anywhere.
Old YouTube Andy until they play the next time, said Darcy,
I was very much old YouTube Andy. So some of the ones I'm curious if people could guess my go-tos. I mean, obviously Donovan against Algeria. Because it was the Dutch, I went back and rewatched the highlights of the 4-3 friendly, the Bobby Wood game. It will forever be known as that in my house.
Do you remember who was it we beat? Did we beat Holland and Germany in like a short window?
Yeah, 2-1 against Germany and then the 4-3.
Oh my God. It was 2015.
A time to be alive. The friendlies of 2015 is how I often refer to them. What else? I went back and watched the highlights of the US Spain. One of the most, I feel like when we talk about like great US games, that one sometimes gets forgotten by people, that 09 semifinal against Spain in the Confederations Cup. God, what a game. Oh, I was loving it, JJ. I wish I could freeze that moment in time. I just want to be on that train forever, excited, watching these highlights. But here we are.
You were absolutely pumped. That text message I got from you last night, I mean, there was even a swear in it, which is so rare.
I curse all the time. I don't need to justify my language. I just don't do it on this podcast. By the way, I meant to tell you, I got a tweet from somebody thanking me for that.
Thanking you for not cursing.
For trying to keep it clean.
I would have loved to talk about yesterday. Just some brilliant games in the World Cup. But it feels like that moment where David Brent gets promoted, but everybody else is worried about their job in the office. And Ricky Gervais, as David Brent walks in, and they're like, what's going on? And he's got this smirk on his face. And he goes, it's fine. We'll talk. Closes the door. They knock on the door. They say, no, David, we want to know now. And he goes, unfortunately, there will be redundancies. And everyone's, oh no. But on the good side, I've been promoted. And they're like, that's not good. And their faces drop and he goes, you're still thinking about the bad news, aren't you? So it doesn't matter if I talk about how great a game Switzerland-Serbia was, it was just intensity in 10 cities. It was such a brilliant game of football. Or South Korea or Uruguay getting just completely, Ghana getting revenge
sort of.
Well, no, they've got revenge on. They made Luis Suarez cry in the stadium.
But they didn't make. I mean, Uruguay beat them soundly.
Yeah, I know, but they started singing his name and started like goading him in the stadium while he was on the bench, unable. Yeah,
no one was really sad to watch the way that played out.
I don't think so either. But Yeah, so I feel like I'm mentioning any or talking about any of this is just
I got no use for any of that right now.
Yeah, right. Okay, but you can't let this World Cup pass you by now just because the US are out. Please
God, no.
Don't do
I've
that.
Never done that before. I'm not about to start now, of course. God, I cherish this tournament. It's just been like the greatest. I still feel the way what I said the other night. I hope Arsene Wenger parachutes in and announces some proclamation that they're going to play this thing up through March. Like, please, God, let it happen. No, I'm not going anywhere. We're going to keep cranking out pods and YouTube live streams like crazy through the end of this thing. I just wasn't ready to have this team be done.
Tooves, the tournament has been incredible, but we're trying to be depressed out here. JJ, calm down. All right. Okay.
There's a time for happiness. This ain't it. Come on, JJ. Keep up.
Sorry. I have misread the tone and the tenor of the room. I apologize. I will leave it to you, Andrew, to figure a way to wrap this bad boy.
I would wrap it almost the way that I started it, by coming full circle and saying the frustration of today will live with American fans for a long time, because there were near misses and the U.S. did play well in spurts. Obviously, there was great frustration over not being able to break down the Dutch the way that we would have liked, especially in that first half, to just watch the ball kind of ping back and forth between center backs without an incisive move. That was peak frustration watching that. And then a goal right before half, it was a killer. There are moments of real frustration, but I mean, you got to come out of this tournament, I would like to hope, feeling proud of this team. This is such a young team. And I know you're right in talking about the fact that there's a difference between young and inexperienced. I don't know that we can necessarily say that this team is inexperienced, because JJ, I know you've laid out chapter and verse. You've got guys who have played in key Champions League fixtures, who are on our bench. You know, Cameron Carter-Vickers is a Champions League captain of a Champions League side on our bench. You know, we've got guys playing huge matches in front of huge audiences every week in the Premier League. But this is a young team that has not had a ton of opportunity to play together. And so the fact that advancing out of a group, you know, a win and in game, the height of pressure in this sport in the third group stage match against a team that was set up to shut them down, to get the goal, to advance, there is a lot to be proud of with this group. And it's only the beginning. They are young. We're going to watch this team grow. Like I said the other night, we're going to get to know this team. There are fun moments ahead. There's no question about that. And the next one of these things is going to be in this country. So there is so much to be excited about. I'm disappointed today, but tomorrow we'll wake up and we'll be pumped, I think, for what's going to be coming up with this group. I think, you know, I'd like to believe that that's where most American fans are at. JJ, covering the U.S. with you specifically has been a joy through qualifying. I think of, you know, I was thinking about that,
that
this World Cup is so fun. Because like you and I think I hope most people listening to this would agree that, like, you know, we are never going to be gatekeepers of this sport in this country. I don't care if you started watching soccer yesterday, come on in. Like, I'm never going to be that guy. There, you get some people like that who get real bitter about wherever they think this sport is in this country and it should be more, and the people who hate on it. Like, I don't know. That is not us. But I do think sometimes, you know, days like today, the excitement of today, it means a ton to every American who likes sports, who woke up to watch this thing. But I think, JJ, about the people who were tweeting at us in fits of rage after frustrating matches late at night against Panama or El Salvador or Honduras. Like, I do think about those guys and girls, you know, who like this stuff really. It's not just like we parachute in every 4 years. Like, I know the people out there who live and die with the random ass friendly. And like, you know, those people exist. And so, like, we want to be here for all of you guys, the ones who just came aboard and the ones who have been with us through the last 8.5 years of watching this thing fluctuate, good times, horrible times, good times. And we're going to keep doing that. It's been so much fun to cover this group, and there's plenty more ahead. Like I said, keep subscribed on this, on the YouTube feed. Keep your notifications on, because we're going to do a lot more. Keep your feeds refreshed, because over the course of the next few weeks with this World Cup, lots of content. It's going to end, and we're going to get right back into Premier League, Champions League, all that. So this was fun, but this is only just kind of one chapter of it that's closed. We're going to keep having a ton of fun with this World Cup, with this team, with this sport. That's about all I got, my friend. You got anything else?
No, I just want to thank everyone who's been in the chat here. It's a lot of fun. And sorry if we got ratty earlier on. I just just a bit annoyed because I was hoping this would go on for a little bit longer. But I appreciate everyone tuning in. Hit like, leave a comment, subscribe everywhere, Spotify. Leave more reviews on Apple, iTunes as well, if that's your thing. Keep following us for this World Cup. It's been tremendous fun. And the football, as Casey Adkins just said here, goes on forever. It's officially going on forever, and it will never, ever stop. So yep. I guess thanks, everyone. And I would say there were times over the last since we've been doing this, I guess, where you're just like, why am I going to the studio tonight for this game with Andrew? I will not get home till 2 o'clock in the morning, and I'll be on the D train at 2 in the morning. This is not worth it. But in the end, it always is worth it. So this is just an inflection point, and we'll go from here, guys.
Yeah, we'll be back in a couple of days to talk about everything that's gone on in the round of 16. And I think to do maybe a little bit more of a retrospective. This was all kind of like spur of the moment, initial thoughts. Well, we're going to take some time to kind of let the dust settle, and we're going to think more about it. And there will be a lot more analysis of what's to come for the U.S. JJ, this was fun. Not the way I had hoped it had gone. Thought maybe this would have been a celebratory podcast. Sadly, this round of 16 barrier is just a tough one for this group to break through. Hopefully 4 years from now, it'll be different. But here we are. To you, I say...
Check you later, fun boy.
I'll see you, man.
Take care.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.